Welcome to the Spitball Sessions. Here we talk about game mechanics, the games we want to see, how to make them, and the games that come close, and how to fix them. We might even talk about the games we love along the way. We have two wonderful hosts, Josh Noyes and Luke Boulay. After the first part's done, we go on to the mouthwash, where we go off the cuff and talk about some random stuff. The topic of this week...
the swiggity swiggity switch.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Spitball Sessions, where no idea is a delicatessen idea. I'm Luke Boulay, and I'll be your host for this session. I'm joined by a resident editor and sliced ham, Josh Noyes. How are you things today?
I have the Katamari theme stuck in my head, and now so do every single one of you.
Well, there goes our listener count.
Sorry.
Thank you.
All three of you.
Now we're down to two. Thanks, Josh.
No, we're down to one. I'm not going to listen to this episode either.
Oh. Well, if no one else is, I guess I'm not going to listen to it either, so there goes that. Anyway, as an explanation of what we're trying to achieve here, this podcast exists as a means to examine games and discuss their nuances. Mostly, though, it devolves into nonsense segueing into nonsense. Nonsense segueing into nonsense. Nonsense segueing into nonsense. Nonsense segueing into nonsense. So, today I thought we would start out this podcast, as it's been about a month since the Nintendo Switch has released. It would be a great idea for us to pitch an idea of a game to really make the best use of the Switch and its varied and interesting mechanisms.
I think that's a good idea, although I will start by saying I still, you know, I know it's been out for a little bit now, I still haven't paid any real attention to it because, you know, I haven't planned on buying one, so I haven't really bothered to do the research as what was going on. And, I, you know, you and I have talked about this a couple times now. I'm just not sure who any of this is for at this point. Like, I know a lot of people have been saying that since, like, the Wii, but I could at least see who those were kind of aimed at, and I kind of got it, and the Switch just doesn't, nothing about the Switch makes sense to me.
Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting that you point that out, because I actually do see that they're kind of aiming for a broad demographic. They are kind of focusing on the Japanese market a bit more. If you're not familiar with what's popular in Japan is a lot more of the handheld,
well,
the
I was
mobile.
Say, maybe you should start by breaking down for those of us who aren't familiar with the Switch, and then we can maybe talk a little bit about some of the whys.
So how do you mean by that?
So, like, because, like I said, I know very little about the Switch itself. Like, what is going on with the Switch? Like,
well,
what is
all right,
this thing?
So, taking a step back. So, the Switch is, it's been out for a month now. It is a handheld console, which is kind of modular in nature. And the entire concept boils down to it's a console, but it's also a handheld at the same time, wherein it comes with a docking port, and when you lock it down into the docking port, it draws power from the docking port and runs video directly to your TV, so you get 1080p, and the chips that are in it, even though it's a small handheld, like a 7-inch tablet, essentially, it's got really powerful chips in it, so it can do pretty good in the visual department.
Like have they said what the graphics card is, what we're looking
at? It is an NVIDIA Tegra chip.
Which is basically what the Xbox One and the PS4 are using.
Generally, but more mobile geared.
Okay.
Essentially, it's like
Well, I mean, at this point, those things are 3 years old. The very same chips they were using could be mobile focused at this point. You could modularize them a little more.
Probably. So you've got those chips in there, and in a small form factor. So, like, in its base state, it's locked into a docking station. It derives power from that, and it plays to your TV. The controllers are kind of like a... It's interesting because it's kind of like pulls from the concept of the Wii U with the modular controllers. They lock into the sides of the controller when it's in handheld mode, but you can... You can separate them, and each one can be an individual controller, so you get instant two-player and multiplayer just by taking them off, or you can hold one in each hand and play single-player games with buttons on one side controller and a second stick on the other one if you know, can do the whole bird's claw to reach it. It's an interesting concept. I don't think it's perfect, but has, and this is a word that makes Josh cringe, but it has potential.
Oh, I have no issue. I have no issue with the term potential. I like to think that I have lots of it, and I'm hoping that someday Spitball Sessions will too.
We have potential to be a fantastic, terrible podcast.
Yes, we have just about that much potential. No, I have no issue. You know, like I've said to you a couple times now, my issue with, or I can at least see where you're coming from saying that it has potential. My big concern, and I've said this a couple times, is I feel like, you know, and people have been saying this for 10 years about Nintendo, so it's not like I'm the first person to say this, but this console makes me feel like Nintendo has lost their way or changed or turned their back on the things that they were over the years. And I know some of that is, you know, leadership change, hierarchy change, that sort of stuff. It concerns me and it frightens me a little bit. I don't like seeing this happen. It's like watching a good friend suddenly get Alzheimer's.
I understand where you're going from there. They have made some interesting choices down the road. But honestly, I think it's always been Nintendo's way. And you just haven't seen it before because their original ideas of being unique and novel have been in a direction that has been like no-brainers for you. So like when they pioneered a lot of the hardware that they've done, they've been like the first in using an analog joystick. They've been the first to use the D-pad. They've been the first for a lot of different and interesting things. And that's kind of where they do. They're always trying to find something new and interesting to add to this stuff. Sure. And these days, that has kind of pushed them in directions that haven't always been the wisest.
But I will also say, like, I mean, I didn't own a Wii. I didn't own a Wii U. There wasn't quite enough there for what I was looking for, but I at least understood what they were trying to do with those. And I could not, you know, like, the Wii wasn't for me. It never was going to be. But I could at least see what they were trying to do with it, and some of the things that they came up with for it, I at least, you know, I was like, oh, that really capitalizes on that in a way that is neat and interesting, and they're doing interesting, cool ideas. The Wii U, more for me, that one, I was more of a just, I can never afford to get myself one. Though now that they're probably going to be going on sale, I may go out and retroactively pick one up. But, like, I at least see where they were going for. Like, the tablet doesn't seem like a weird idea to me at the time, but I at least know where you're going for with that. I don't know who the Switch is for. Because, like, people who want that kind of gaming probably already have a console, if not a, I guess this is the same thing we said about old Nintendo, well, but they have a console already.
I mean, yeah, but that's kind of the thing. A lot of what is appealing to many people is not the fact that it's either a console or a handheld. It's the fact that it's both. Because okay. No one's going to take their PlayStation 4, strap it on their back with a tiny little screen and a controller and go out to the park and play video games. It's not feasible. It's not good for that. The games that you have for the Switch are designed in such a way that you can just take the thing out of its dock and go out to the park and let the dog run wild and still play the exact same game unfettered and unreduced out in the wild. And you don't have to worry about it. Well, I mean, yes, so there's limitations to the battery and junk.
Well, there's limitations to the battery, but so here's my question. Like, if you were pitching this as not as the next evolution of a console, but as the next evolution of the handheld, I can see where you're going. Like, the 3DS is great. I love my 3DS, but it's getting long in the tooth. I can see that as that argument. But why Switch and not just iPad? Why Switch and not just...
Because the iPad has the iPad and the Android have already been done.
No,
they're,
I know.
They're not going to copy something outright. No,
I'm not saying... No, I know why Nintendo is not doing that, because there's copyright.
Oh, you're talking about why would
somebody take a Switch and not their iPad? Because I'll tell you, if I'm going out to the park, I'm probably not going to be playing a lot of video games, especially not if I have my dog with me. I'm going to be going out, and I will probably be taking some pictures, and maybe I'll want to listen to some music, and hey, if I'm there, sure, maybe I'll, you know, or maybe I'll want to write something, and sure, while I'm there, maybe I'll pop into, you know, Cookie Clicker for 30 seconds. Well, Cookie Clicker's a bad example. You know, maybe I'll pop into something like, you know, some Bloons Tower Defense or something for 30 seconds, but, you know, I'm not going to sit in the park and play a video game.
Well, maybe you won't, but what if you've got to take an air a plane flight somewhere and you need something, yeah, you can bring the 3DS, but you're not going to be able to play Breath of the Wild or the big Mario title or Skyrim on your 3DS. It's not really suitable for that.
Sure.
I mean, in some ways, it's been an acceptable
use. I'm not sure I'm going to play a Switch on an airplane, and I'm pretty sure that if the guy next to me is playing a Switch on the airplane, I'm going to be elbowing him the entire journey.
Well, that's just because you're a jerk.
No, that's because that thing is 7.5 inches wide, plus the buttons is 12. His elbow is going to be in my chair.
Corner to corner, he's not going to be in your chair. Besides the fact that he can just pull down his tray table, set the thing down, pull off the Joy-Cons, and play without...
I suppose.
It's a console designed around the concept of versatility.
Okay.
And I'll point this out right now. It's not always going to be the big thing for everybody.
No.
And a lot of what they're targeting, in my opinion, is actually a Japanese market. Because the Japanese are more big into mobile handhelds. It's much more of a, what's the word I'm looking for?
It's a commuter-based society.
Yeah, there's a lot more commuting, and it's just a lot more trendy. Small handheld devices are a trendy thing in Japan.
I'm not sure I would consider the Switch a small handheld device.
No, it's a huge handheld device, but they already got the 3DS out there. They've already said they're not abandoning the 3DS.
Right.
But
I mean, I guess I think for me that's sort of the thing. Like, even as the next evolution of the handheld is, like, I can't think of a situation, and you know, I think this is not that far off from what people used to say about the Wii U screen tablet, is I can't think of a situation where I would be out in a place where I would rather use the Switch than. I guess I can if I was in Japan. But in my day-to-day life, I can't think of a situation where I'll be out in public where I'd rather use that than 3DS.
Well, yes.
And the reason I'm bringing this up isn't just to kick sand in Nintendo's face, although that's sometimes fun to kick sand in people's faces, but I feel like if you're going to pitch a game, you have to know who your audience is, and I just don't know who that audience is at this point, because, like, I get it for the 3DS. I get it for the Wii. I don't really get it for consoles in general anymore, but this one more so than the others.
Well, you know, I think both of us, generally speaking, you a little less than me, don't go into console gaming as much because we've got our computer. So if we're going to sit down, we're going to play a big, powerful game that requires a lot of guts. Cool. We have our PCs. We've upgraded our PCs.
Sure,
but I
also have non-Nintendo consoles, and I at least understand, you know, some of them at least do things slightly differently. Like, I get where those are coming from, and they have different environments, and I get why those would exist.
Yeah.
I don't need them, but I get why they exist.
Well, excluding the fact that it is a console, it is mm-hmm. Nintendo's main console, so...
Actually, let me back up for a quick second. So you talked about versatility.
Okay.
Like, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard the term jack-of-all-trades?
Yeah.
You know what the second half of that phrase is?
Not off the top of my head.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So the problem with being a versatile thing is you do everything a little bit, but you do nothing best. And so in Japanese culture, I get that, because they do need a lot of versatility, because Japan is a very versatile society. In America, we have moved very much towards the single-use things. Consoles serve a very specific function, which is different from PCs, which is different from tablets. They are each designed to fill a specific niche.
Well,
and the Switch, yes, it kind of fills the role of an iPad. It kind of fills the role of a console.
It does not fill the role of an iPad or an Android.
What I mean is it fits into that slot. It fits into that slot as a hand. Because you can do tablet-y stuff with it. You can take it in the same place as you would take a tablet. You can take it in the same... You can put it in a console thingy, and now you have a console attached to your television. But it does all of those things just enough that it doesn't, to me, quite feel like it ever fully takes the place of any of those things, at which point I have to ask myself, well, why not just have the things devoted to those things?
And I'm not quite sure where you want me to go with that.
Well, I hoped you might have an answer.
Well, I disagree with you.
Okay, well then explain that.
Okay, so...
I mean, I agree. You don't want to play a lot of games on the like. I agree. It doesn't take the place of the iPad because you're never going to play games on
iPad. It doesn't take the place of the iPad because it's not competing with the iPad.
No.
And just because it takes the same form factor doesn't mean a thing because it's not it doesn't use any kind of software suite. It's strictly speaking a gaming console, and they've always been adamant about that. They don't step on the toes of they don't put DVD software into their stuff, and people have complained about that.
I'm not saying step on the toes. I'm saying like for me that would be how they would get me away to get me more on board is if it was more like a tablet.
But that's not what it's.
No, I know.
That's not what it's focused for. Well, I'm talking about versatility as a gaming system.
Right.
In that, it's the same game no matter where you take it.
Right.
And it allows you to do several things that, like, say, the Wii U didn't do. The the fact that the controllers, the Joy-Cons, can be used in a versatility of ways, it encourages multiplayer and. And a single one of those devices, I think, can handle up to, I think, 4 Joy-Cons, maybe 6.
Yeah.
And
also, Joy-Con is the dumbest word.
Yeah, the whole share the Joy thing was a little tacky.
Well, I don't even care about, like, whatever. Marketing is bad, upside, downside, left, and right. Joy-Con is, like, Wiimote was dumb. This is way worse. Like,
anyway.
It's a joystick or it's a controller.
Back, no, it's not a joystick in the concept of a joystick. It's a Joy-Con as in share the joy, not it's their play on words nonsense. But
well, that's even worse then.
Anyway, the concept that, you know, you have two controllers in the box that can both be like a full-fledged controller with 4 sticks and 8 buttons and then the 2 triggers,
right.
And it's got the HD rumble and all that other nonsense that comes with it. And I'm getting really quiet here. So that's all there. And so it kind of like encourages like however you want to play games,
right.
It has that available to you. And it doesn't change what you're playing. You're still playing Nintendo titles and hopefully some third-party stuff that's interesting. But it's not trying to compete with anybody. It's trying to fill its own market.
Well, right. I get that.
So that's the argument. If you're ever going to say, well, why do I need a Nintendo home console when I have a PlayStation 3 or an Xbox One?
Right.
Then you're not going to get anywhere because why would you?
Well,
why would you have a device that you can a device like that when you have a 3DS that you could take or a PlayStation Vita? Because you can take those out to the park or
right. I mean that's literally what I'm asking.
It's because it does all of them in once.
Okay.
And it plays the same games. So I can take Mario and I can play Mario by myself, or I can give my wife a controller and we can play Mario together.
Right.
Or I can hog them and play Mario this way or that way.
So the reason that I'm asking this is because, you know, so we're ostensibly pitching a game because this is Spitball Sessions and we pitch ostensibly games. Who are we selling this game to? Because I'm just trying to figure out who buys one of these. Like, with the Wii, it was sold for people who didn't really like games. Or who hadn't really found games before. It was a simpler console. You had to do a lot of, you know, there was a lot of motion-based stuff, so it wound up being really popular in, like, nursing homes. It wound up being really popular with
children.
Okay,
so I think a lot of their main conceits with like, what Nintendo is targeting as a demographic is more multiplayer, more group play.
Okay.
Because of the way the Joy-Cons are designed, that is a big...
Can we just stop saying that? We just call them controllers?
That's what they're called. They're Joy-Cons. Joy-Cons. Get used to it. Joy-Cons.
No, I'm not going to get used to it. They're controllers. Because here's the thing. You could call what it game... You know what? They called it the Xbox One, and now everybody just calls it the Xbox.
Actually, most people call it the X-Bone, but...
Well, exactly.
Okay.
You can't control your
anyway, graphics. Besides your nonsense about its name...
It's so bad!
A rose is a rose no matter what you call it.
Yes, and if a rose is called a poop, you won't want to eat it.
I wouldn't want to eat a rose anyway. Back to the point.
Ugh.
The idea that the console is flexible.
Yeah.
I think it supports up to eight consoles in local Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So you can play 8 player Mario Kart just by getting...
Wait, 8 consoles or 8...
8 consoles.
People.
8 consoles.
So... What if I just want 8 people?
eight people, then most likely you would need two controllers and eight controllers. So you could play.
So you would need to buy eight Switches.
No.
Okay.
No, you would need to get two Switches.
Okay.
And eight. Well,
oh boy, that really works out well for Nintendo, then, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, you do have to spend money to play games. That's how it works.
Sure, but you can play eight people. You can play eight player games on the Wii U by with only one.
I don't know about that. And hey, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it supports eight controllers. I was thinking four, but I don't know that off the top of my head. But like, I'm not talking about costs.
Okay.
We're not looking at the cost because I'm going to tell you don't bother because like $90 for a pro controller is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But back to the point, it's designed in such a way. So like, for instance, if you wanted to play Splatoon 4v4, eight people with their consoles get together and they just it works. You just start playing together. Or Mario Kart, you could get a couple of those and you know, you have four players split screen on each of the consoles,
sure.
probably on a big TV because it's going to be terrible on the tiny.
But I mean, and I get that. Like, I guess I get where that's coming from. But at that point, like, aren't most of those people just playing like Steam games? Like, isn't everybody just playing Jackbox?
We're not comparing it with other systems.
No, we are because we have to figure out where our demographic is. Isn't everybody just already on a PC?
No.
Okay.
Not everyone is on a PC, and most people who are on PCs are also willing to get another console. Don't you have a PlayStation 3?
Yeah.
Can't you technically play the vast majority of those games on your PC if you wanted to?
Actually, not most of them because Japan is weird.
And can you play Mario Kart 8 on your PC? No.
No.
You can't because of the same reason, exclusivity.
Yeah, that's fair.
So if we're talking about pitching a game, one of the major driving factors is just making a game on the console that people would want
to
play.
I'll tell you what. I'm never going to pitch a console-exclusive game because that gets us less money.
That's your choice.
Okay, fine.
Okay, well, you heard it here. It looks like we're actually not going to pitch a game because...
No, we can pitch a game. I'm just saying that console exclusivity is weird if you're...
If we're building a system that's supposed to be taking advantage of the Switch's specific stuff, it's going to have to be exclusive
because
there's no way to build a system that will take advantage of, say, HD Rumble, as an example, and then put it on the PC and expect it to work.
So what on earth is HD Rumble?
HD Rumble, it's the linear actuators. It's the same thing that's in the Steam controllers.
Okay.
There's a specific game, the 1-2 Switch game that comes with it.
Oh, yeah.
Has that built in where you can turn it and it simulates a number of balls in a box, and you can actually feel whenever one of them hits the wall. And you're supposed to actually count the balls.
But did you just say the Steam controller can do that?
I hate you. I hate you so much. So if you guys haven't noticed at this point, Josh is like adamantly against this process because he honestly doesn't like the Nintendo Switch. I don't think he likes it at all.
I don't like it, but I just don't get it. I don't understand why anybody would want it.
Yeah, but you barely know anything about it. You haven't looked into it. You haven't done any research. How can you like or dislike something that you haven't done the research to understand?
Well, here's the thing. I don't understand the part of consoles all that much in this day and age.
You know, I've heard that a lot.
Most of the things that I can do on a console that aren't console-exclusive games, I can do on my PC.
But that logic boils down all the time, and there's no straight answer to that, because the truth of the matter is eventually every title ends up on the PC,
right? And to some extent I feel like this is the last gasp of consoles,
but people still buy consoles.
Yeah,
they're
fair.
Still lucrative. They wouldn't be making a PlayStation 4 super turbo laser version in a few months?
Right, but again, I feel like this is the last gasp of consoles. And
maybe.
We will get to that in a future mouthwash,
maybe.
I think.
That's a possibility. And actually, if that happens, the only person who's set up to continue is Nintendo.
Yeah,
because
they have the handheld stuff.
They build consoles that aren't PCs. And while, yes, the HD Rumble is reminiscent of the linear, it uses linear actuators, and it's reminiscent of what's in the Steam controller, that they're always innovating new and interesting ways to do that. And the big consoles, Xbox and PlayStation, they're constantly just trying to overpower each other. And what has always been the outstanding factor that is, anything you can do, I can do better. No, wait, the PC can do it better than us.
Well, that's what I mean. I suspect that this is not the last generation.
I'm sorry to point this out, Josh, but that has been happening since Nintendo 64 days. It's been an argument as old as time. Everyone's been saying that consoles are going to die, and then after 5 years, they're like, oh, PCs are going to die because who wouldn't want a console? But it's been going back and forth for centuries.
But it kind of hasn't this time. And here's the other thing, is that the Xbox and PlayStation 4 are just PCs. They're literally just PCs with different front ends.
Yes, with one exception.
Right.
You sit in front of your TV with a controller.
Which is what I do with my PC sometimes.
Well, yeah, that's because your PC's set up to do that. Mine's not.
Well,
but
it could be.
It's... There is a... I'm peeking out here. There is a definite advantage to PCs.
Yes.
But they haven't pushed out consoles yet.
So if your argument... So then I think maybe the argument here is, you know, you mentioned this earlier, that, you know, if your argument is that this is, like I said, the last or the next evolution of mobile gaming and the swan song of console gaming, I could probably get behind you on that thing. The question then becomes, I still don't know who this is aimed at, but I'll get on board with you with the assumption that it's aimed at people.
This is where it's aimed at. This has always been Nintendo's target.
Okay.
When they bring out the guns and they aim for everybody.
Okay.
They don't say, oh, this is for women up over age 40, or this is for boys under the age 12. They make games that anybody would be interested in playing. Because I can guarantee you, You look at a game that Nintendo makes and you'd be like, oh, that's for little kids. But adults, grown adults, will pick them up and love them, because that's always been the way it is. And they've always been trying to expand their base. I mean, the Wii was a prime example of a success story. That was kind of like their dream.
Okay.
What they've always wanted with the Wii was just to get everybody. And they got everyone and they were happy.
So who do we – so then the question is, who do we aim this hypothetical game at? Because so are we making this game to work on the Switch, or are we making this game to take advantage of the Switch? And then are we pitching this game aimed at people who will actually buy the Switch, or are we just pitching this game at everybody?
I'd say we would. I think who would play it is not as big a deal unless you consider what you want to go for here. I think we need to think about, it should be for everybody, but to take advantage of the Switch.
Because that's sort of why I've been hitting a lot of this stuff, is because if you're talking about taking advantage of the Switch, nothing that you have said about the Switch sounds to me like it has things that you can't do on any of these other systems. You talked about the stuff with the Joy-Cons, having that weird sensitivity thing. So that sounds like one thing that is unique. But a lot of that stuff isn't... I mean, so it's not like... The two things that it sounds to me is, you need to have a game that makes equal amount of sense to be played in your hands and on the go, as well as in front of the couch.
Okay. There's a lot more functionality in the Joy-Cons we could exploit potentially. There's the full accelerometer rotational sensor suite that's in all the high-end the advanced Wii U's. You know, the one that pretty much came with Wii Sports Resort.
I was going to say, the one that's basically like the Move.
Yeah, well, there's that. That's all built into it. And that is there.
But games have already been built with that in mind.
Yes, there have. Okay. So, but that's one factor. There's the HD Sense sensory response, which is great. And then there is... instead of just having an IR camera like the Wiimotes have, that's a little more advanced, that can actually detect distance. So you could build a game that, based on how far away something is, it can recognize hand gestures and stuff like that. You could actually probably recognize any kind of shapes. So, actually, that's a great idea for a game. Imagine a game.
It's the Natal.
Sort of. I don't know what Natal is.
Well, it's now known as Kinect.
Oh.
But it was the prototype. It was what
Why don't you just call it the Kinect? That's what we know it as.
No, because the prototype, back when it was still okay. Tall, had some of those things in mind that never actually made it to Kinect.
I don't know how sophisticated the camera is, but it would be kind of an interesting idea to set it up so that you, like, I don't know.
And when I talked about, like...
I don't know how that would work.
And when I talked about Last Gasp of console game, or Swan Song, that's sort of what I mean, is we have this thing is now a game, a console that is built around not sitting in front of the TV, getting up and walking around, moving around.
But Nintendo's been doing that since the Wii U. Rather.
Let me end my last sentence here. If/when Nintendo pairs up with Oculus Rift, I'm pretty sure they already have this whole thing in place.
They're not. They've been planning brain poop. The Switch is designed with virtual reality in mind.
Okay, well then when they set out their own virtual reality thing, they clearly already are they're already basically doing the Oculus Rift lunch eating thing.
Yes, that is a goal for Nintendo in the future.
Well, then this whole thing is bankrupt and I'm out of here.
Okay. Well, that has been another Spitball Sessions. We're sorry we couldn't come to a fruitful conclusion, but why not?
We can keep... Really? It's VR capable too?
According to them, not out of the box. They're planning on expanding in that
direction.
You know
the one thing that I hate more than consoles? VR? Well, actually, I don't hate consoles. You know the one thing that I don't understand more than the Switch?
VR.
Yes. Anyway, fine. I'm really angry.
Yes, you should see their comparison. I think Trevor's gonna hate us.
Oh, I can turn this down. You could have told me that an hour ago.
Okay, so anyway, where does that put us?
You told me I needed to lean in because I wasn't talking loud enough. Well, we could just back up the VR stuff. So you know the thing that I don't understand even more than the Switch?
What's that?
VR. Like I don't get it. I don't get either of those things. But clearly, you're talking about positional stuff, you're talking about locational stuff, you're talking pointer stuff. That's all the stuff that the HTC Vive does.
No, the HTC Vive doesn't have the recognition built in.
It has room scan technology.
It has room scan technology, yes. That's for finding the person who's playing the system. I'm talking about having on the controller a sensor that you could use in some way in that way.
That's kind of what the hand things do. I'm just saying, it sounds to me like... I'm not saying that they are trying to rip it off. I am saying that it sounds an awful lot like how they are handling a lot of that stuff, which means that games that work on one would probably cross pretty easily across that divide. Because it sounds like... And good grief, if you were going to tell me that their plan was in 6 months, they were going to set out a VR helmet for this thing, and hey, now you've got built-in VR headset, it can tell where you are in the world, it can tell what you're looking at, and it can tell how you're looking at it. I mean, you know what game you've just pitched is Serial Experiments Lane. Remember the scene in the second episode where they're running around playing tag?
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally what you've just pitched.
Well, I wasn't pitching a game. I was just telling you what the hardware was capable of.
Well, I'm just saying, that's the game that hardware pitches. It pitches itself. Of course, at that point, that means that we're all going to die and be eaten up by the internet, so I'm not sure that we should necessarily develop that game.
Delicious!
I'm just saying that's what you... I mean, that game sells itself.
Okay, well, there you go. I guess we've just pitched Serial Experiments Lane, which is actually an anime, not a...
Yeah, don't game. Watch that. It's a really bad show.
It's messed up. Anyway, okay, so...
But seriously, that I mean, like, that is kind of my pitch, is... I mean, if we're talking about this thing from the sake of what does it do that other things don't, strap a VR headset to that thing and turn that thing into a VR platform. Or turn that thing into a double VR platform.
Yeah, but that's something that Nintendo's already planning on doing. That's not a game. That's a hardware result. That's where we're going with it.
Sure, but... I mean, I'd argue that it has all the things you... No, but... I mean, VR itself isn't really a game. But I'm just saying, there are things that you could do with that vis-a-vis things like... I mean, hey, you know what would work really, really stupidly well on this game, on this console?
What's that?
Pokemon Snap.
You know, a new Pokemon Snap would probably drive everybody crazy happy.
No, heck, forget Pokemon Snap. This is Pokemon Snap Go.
Pokemon Snap.
This is Pokemon Snap Go. because it's literally using the Pokemon Go technology with the GPS.
So you just expanding awareness. The augmented reality and yes. actually turning it into more of a full-fledged game rather than just a stupid little...
I mean, there are people who think Pokemon Go is a pretty serious game. They play a lot of it. I have people at my company who are now forming Pokemon Go parties, okay? To go out after work each week. I mean, whatever. If, you know, if they're all 30-somethings, if they want to go out on the weekend because, you know, they're tired of drinking at bars, let them.
I guess that is a good...
You and I podcast because we're sick of drinking at bars.
I've never drunk in a bar.
Well, that's your problem.
Anyway, okay, so I guess that's our pitch. Go VR?
No, Pokemon Switch Snap Go.
Okay, so, all right. We've just pitched Pokemon Snap Go. Let's take Pokemon, turn it into Pokemon Snap Go.
No, take Pokemon Snap, turn it into Pokemon Snap Go. Because, so you take Pokemon Snap, where you have to look at things and take pictures of them, and then you're judged on the quality of the photograph. Now you add the GPS stuff, and the locational stuff, and the situational stuff, so it can tell how far away you are from the console, so the console can tell how close you are to something that is cool. You could have, I mean, it already sounds like it's going to have some sort of a GPS-based idea in the console, correct?
I don't know if it's going to integrate a GPS, but considering the fact that it's
I mean, it knows where you are.
It's, I don't know about that.
It knows where you are in relation to the console.
Probably. Maybe. Which, I don't know.
Which means that it has to know where the console is.
Yeah, but you'd have to take the console with you.
Sure. There has to be some... I mean, if it isn't in there, there's got to be some way to spoof something like that. I mean, yeah, you take that, you make it so that, you know, you actually have to frame it well, and yeah, you add the augmented reality stuff to it. I honestly
would love to see that. If Nintendo does go the full VR route, if it doesn't just drop it by the wayside like well, it's done
I'm,
so
I'm
many
not,
great
I'm not
ideas.
I'm not even saying it has to be VR. I'm saying you could do that with what you have out of
no,
the box.
No, I honestly think, well, you could do it out of the box, like a camera kind of situation where I'm holding it in front of my face and you can't see it.
Use it as a viewfinder.
Yeah, and then, yeah, you know, actually, rebuilding Pokemon Snap as an augmented reality game with a little more depth than what you would actually see in Go, and where you go out and you just take pictures of Pokemon and get ranked for it, is actually a good idea.
Yes.
Of course, people will think you're a weirdo. Also, I don't think it has a back-facing camera.
Well, it doesn't need to. Well, it has to have some sort of camera on there. Because you said it has You said it has the...
No, on the Joy-Cons. And when they're on the system, they're facing up. And I don't know that they're any more than an advanced version of the IR cameras.
Those controls rotated.
Not on the device, no. They slide in on rails.
Ah, okay. Well, okay, I'm sure there are ways around that. But okay, it sounds like you... It sounds like you have some other idea in mind.
Yeah, as a game concept, I kind of had one idea of. Well, and I don't know.
I'd like to point out that this is two non-shmup related sessions in a row that I've pitched Pokemon Snap. So, Nintendo, if you're out there, like really re-release Pokemon Snap, everybody knows that's the best Nintendo game you've ever made.
Now that you've asked for it, Nintendo will never give it to you.
I know. Well, they also haven't given me Pikmin 2 for the GameCube either.
No. So, what was I going to say? If there's good shape recognition at a reasonable distance, mm-hmm. I would love to see kind of like a more sophisticated, almost like a semi-shooter where you try to snap people. With the camera. I don't know. I had an idea in my head, and it's not really coming together now, the more that I think about it.
I mean, the stuff that I've seen them so far use for it is things like Liar's... Like weird versions of Liar's Dice. A lot of weird...
I've seen that. Yeah, that's all in the 1-2 Snap game.
Yeah, it's all in 1-2 Snap.
It's all a bunch of little...
I thought it was 1-2 Switch.
Yes, not 1-2 Snap. You've got Snap in my head now. 1-2 Switch. There's like one where you milk a cow.
Yeah.
And it like gives you feedback of that. There's the one where you count the balls, and then there's like one. There's a really cool one.
We were playing Liar's Dice, literally.
Yeah. How did that work? Yeah. So you have the thing, and you shake the dice,
sure,
and it vibrates, telling you how many points the other person has.
Exactly.
And then you can either turn it over to lock in your choice,
right,
or you can shake it to change yours.
Which, I mean, that kind of stuff I could see some interesting ideas for. The problem is none of the things that I can see interesting ideas for are video games.
No, that's the thing. A lot of
really cool board games with that stuff.
You know, that would actually be a great idea.
Yeah, but you know what I don't need is a $600 board game console or a $400 board game console.
Why would it be a $400 board game console?
I mean, isn't it like $380 or something?
The Switch is $300.
Okay, I don't need a $300 board game console.
But okay, we're not looking at the cost of the console included
I'm saying that
we're not going to make a game that's going to make people go out and buy the Switch. It's just not going to happen.
I get that, but I'm saying that if a bunch of board games come out for that thing, that I feel like people are just going to be like, well, wait, I paid all this money for this thing and all that's coming out is board games? Even if they're really cool.
Well,
people get mad that their PlayStation only has indie games coming out.
So my idea for this was just to come up with another game to add to the repertoire.
Gotta stop tapping on the table.
To add to what was available on the console.
Okay.
Excuse me. The problem here is you keep saying, well, I'm not going to buy a whole console for this kind of situation. And that's just not going to happen. Or I can't see that.
No, I was saying the problem with saying that I can see a lot of really great potential for board games. I'm saying that the problem is there has to be more to it than just board games, because nobody's going to want to buy something just for a bunch of board games.
Yeah. Well, no. But again, we're not going to sell people on the Switch with...
No, I get that. I'm just saying that...
But why not? Why not pitch out an idea of using all of the features of the Switch Joy-Cons and make a more advanced Mario Party as an option that actually is good? Where the minigames are...
I got a better suggestion. How about you not make Mario Party and just make a new game?
Oh, the only person who hates Mario Party more than me would be
Jeff Gerstmann.
It would be Jeff Gerstmann. Which is unfortunate.
Or possibly Drew Scanlon.
The thing about it is I could see there being like imagine if we were to take, I don't know, like Carcassonne or something like that and make it so that you could play it on the Switch or something like that.
Forget Carcassonne. Can you imagine that if you were playing Battlestar Galactica and the only way that you knew that you were a traitor is because your Wiimote shook once at the very beginning of the game?
That would be awesome, actually.
Or, for those of you who don't know, Battlestar Galactica is a very long, very intense, and very complex board game where it's ostensibly you're all working together to escape a situation based on the TV show Battlestar Galactica, but one of you may or may not be a traitor.
I have an awesome idea.
You could actually do something similar with the game Resistance, which I think a lot more people know.
Awesome idea.
Okay.
Imagine playing a board game, something like, I don't know, Two Rooms and a Boom, where the major conceit in Two Rooms and a Boom, which is actually a really great game, is it's like all the players divide into two rooms,
right,
and everybody has a card, and on the card it tells you what you are,
right,
and you can choose to or not
like
to
werewolf.
Show. Yeah, and the idea is to figure out who, like the overarching premise is to figure out who is the VIP is and who has the bomb, and you have to keep the bomb away from the VIP, and if after so many turns the bomb goes off with the VIP, then the terrorists, the people who have terrorist cards, win.
Right.
And there's about a bunch more.
It's very similar to Werewolf. It's very similar to Resistance.
Imagine a game, right, where instead of having it docked, you keep the Switch free.
Okay.
Right, and you have everybody has their Joy-Con, and they have relevant information on that. You lock in your Joy-Con and the screen displays your information. You make your turn. You take your Joy-Con on and you pass it on. So everybody is playing blind because their turn information is...
Can't everybody see?
No. Well, that's the thing. That's why it doesn't stay docked. You keep it. You have it in your hands.
Okay.
You lock in your Joy-Con. You play your turn in private or just not facing everyone and you keep passing it on. So it'd be a turn-based game, but the game would only relative information based on your Joy-Con, and you would use your Joy-Con to play it.
Take it one better.
What's that?
Because the way you're talking about it makes it sound something like a Crystal Chronicles, where the person who has it is actually playing a game.
Mm-hmm.
Do it one better. two of you have to plug in your Joy-Cons at the same time, or it doesn't actually activate.
I like that. Oh, do you know what that reminds me of? Do you remember those old arcade games where you were on opposite sides of yes. the thing, and you so you could just turn it sideways, and each person would be
no,
on
no.
each...
I was actually thinking of it more like two key cards, where you both have to have your cards plugged in, and then what was that old show with the whammies?
Whammies?
The old game show. Or they spin and they go, no whammies, no whammies, no whammies.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So at the end of that, so it's basically a prisoner's dilemma thing. So like, so you put in your joy, so you put in your Joy-Con and you're pressing one of three buttons, either like share, help, hurt, or work together. And if you're both on the same side and you're both pressing help, you do something. If you're both on opposite sides and you press hurt, you both take each other out. But if one of you is on one side and one of you is on the other side and you press either help or hurt, you then, you know, it's basically like a modification of the prisoner's dilemma argument of four, like, say you have eight people, four of them are Russians, four of them are Americans, and you are trying to find the, and you're trying to find the Russian VIP, or, you know, similar to your two rooms in a boom idea, except that you're all spies and the only way that you can show each other is by logging into this secret computer together. And
so,
handshaking.
Well, that would also be kind of interesting because you could still have the obfuscation because it would present information that was relevant to mm-hmm. just the two people.
Yes.
And then you have to make a decision based on like – so it would be like it would present you with a scenario.
Right.
Ask you what you would do. You would each key in an answer, but you wouldn't actually see the results.
Right.
And then so you would keep –
well, you could do it two ways because you could either do it where – you both put it in and you get some information and then you could do like trust or don't trust. And then it would either feed out lies or truth. Or you could do it an alternate way where it's like assassinate or assist and you have to decide that before you put it into the console. So you could either have two versions where it's like before you put it in you have to decide whether you're going to attack them or not. And then if you put it in, like or you could have a conversation dialogue with them and then once you put it in, find out more information. So there would be like two sort of sets to it. But at that point, I mean, that's not that far off from something like a resistance. It's just a little more randomized. There's a little bit more procedure. It's like blind resistance.
Well, and you also have a lot more control on the digital level because with a game like Resistance, you have all the cards and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, but with that, it's all like handled.
Hide it all.
Yeah, you got it all handled by the system. It would add an immense level of like surprise and intrigue
exactly.
in the gameplay itself. So that's actually
and
a
actually
good
pitch. Really like if you could and actually in that case you could do something like in Babylon or Babylon 5 Battlestar Galactica where
I
you
prefer
could actually,
Babylon 5 myself.
No, but well it, no because this is relevant to Battlestar Galactica, which is you could have somebody who is secretly a Cylon and they don't even know it until the very end of the game. Because in a card-based game, you know, they have in Battlestar Galactica, they have Cylon sympathizers, but what they don't have is people who don't, like, I mean, you technically do, because you deal out cards halfway through the game.
Yes.
And those could tell you, oh, suddenly you're a Cylon. But this way, you could literally make it all the way through the game and then find out, oh, you're actually a Cylon. You've been a Cylon this whole time. Nobody, not even you, knew it, and now you lose.
That could be something.
That would be so frustrating, but also awesome.
Not lose. I mean, it would be the type of thing where you perpetuate.
Well, it depends. If it's one of those things where it's like, if the humans win, all the humans win, and if the Cylons win, all the Cylons win.
Oh no! Okay, so that would be the thing, like a unified goal.
Okay.
So instead of like what you do with the guy across the way, but each time you present it, he's like it, help or hurt kind
right.
of thing, like. So, and I think the whole spy or Cylon thing would work well.
Yeah.
Wherein it's just like
it's a traitor mechanic.
It would tell you what's going on, right? All the time, it's like, okay, player so and so, so and or your controller is vibrating. Come lock it.
Right.
So it would, and then it would tell you what's going on,
yep.
and you would do it, and it would tell you what happens. Or in some cases, it'd be like everyone needs to come approach the thing and
yep.
press A on their Joy-Con. When everyone's there, they press A. It knows everyone's there, and it says this is the results of what's been happening. Somebody hears a Cylon, your remote is vibrating right now.
Right.
And then
exactly.
it goes on from there.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of options for some really interesting board games these devices.
Or specifically, there's a lot of really interesting options for a lot of really, really nasty psychological Skinner boxes with these games.
I'm on board.
Yeah. I actually, what I'm really thinking of, the more you talk about this, is the manga Liars game, which is all about these kinds of psychological trickery games and cheating and tricking people out of money and doing using things like, you know, Skinner boxes and prisoners' dilemmas and basic understanding of like how Russian roulette works and all these kinds of things. And I feel like a lot of, like, you could actually translate a lot of those into games for the Switch, where you could make a very interesting Russian roulette style video game.
Yeah, pretty easily. Although
I'm not sure that Nintendo would allow you to sell it, but you could make it. I'm not sure that would align with their family friendly nature.
I don't know. It could be fun. So okay,
put the Switch console to your head, and if it shakes, you die.
So that's our second pitch already. Sure. That's pretty interesting. So we have Pokemon Snap Go, and now we also have what are we going to call this?
Hang on. I think based on like the I have no mouth and I must scream, we could call it something like Allied Master Computer or something along those lines. So like the idea being like you are like it's super super Cold War.
We'll do that. We'll call it Comrade Computer.
There you go.
Comrade Computer, and it will be like, you remember that RPG?
Oh, no. How about Colonel Panic?
Okay. I like Comrade Computer.
Comrade Computer.
Or Comrade Colonel might be cool. But Colonel Panic is too, like, U.S.
Colonel
military.
Colonel Panic is a song by, what's his face?
Yeah, anyway. It also reminds me of, that Paranoia. RPG? Paranoia. Yes.
Yeah.
That kind of concept would be phenomenal with the whole mobility joystick. So you'd either have, like, unified decision-making or, in some cases, singular decision-making. Right. It would just be required that you lock in your Joy-Con,
identify. Actually, you know what would be a really gross way of doing it? Would be to do something like a Johann Sebastian Joust or Johann Sebastian Joustify it, where there is where each group gets one. You know, it's not just one person has a Switch controller.
Oh.
You have a group. And somebody has to be designated to pick that controller up. And they get to go off with it and make whatever decision. And you don't know what decision they're making.
Or even like depending on the situation. And it could tell you what to do. So you could have that flexibility where it's like one of your teammates needs to take the controller.
Like the show Survivor. Where like, oh, we're starving. That team has 50. Or like, you know, this week's challenge is...
And one person gets picked to do it.
We need to build a bridge. And one person from each team gets picked to do it, and they get to take the controller. And for all you know, they're going over there and destroying your bridge.
Which you hope doesn't happen.
No. They're going over and destroying their own team's bridge because they're secretly a bad person and they're making their own money.
I wouldn't go that far. That's a little too elaborate. But I do like the idea.
Can you imagine how much paranoia that would cause in the team if one person might be evil?
But you have that whole, if you're going with that route, it'd be the voting off the island. And after everybody takes a turn doing a mission.
Right.
Then it shows you who did what, and then you just vote off. So you'd have to be smart about it.
It's not like that. No, it would be like, you could do it well, or you could do it poorly. But make it like the stock market, where like you could do this, or you could do it dishonestly and pocket $50 or whatever.
That would depend on the situation.
And whoever pockets the most amount of money at the end of the game wins.
Well, it's a possibility. I could see something like that.
So you're like, well, the thing is, it's not that one person is necessarily always messing everybody up. It's that everybody's messing up a little bit, and the person who is the most outrageous
about it
never gets,
try not to get caught.
It's don't get caught.
That's another good thing.
But everybody but you don't know who might be working against you and who might be actually really honest. And, can you imagine the amount of just, like, screaming going on in that group by, like, round four?
I'm starting to see something akin to, like, almost like the
I'm starting to see people, like, murdering each other. It's awesome!
Where there's just a compilation of mind-bendy games.
Yes, exactly.
That just take advantage of the potential for anonymity that comes with having your Joy-Con. And, that would be awesome.
Except I'm seeing it ending like Lord of the Flies.
I know. You are an evil person.
Yes.
So.
No. It's not that I'm an evil person. It's that I really like watching people's, like, I really like watching how people think. And this is a really good way to do it.
Okay, so that's...
maybe I'm an evil person.
That's going to be it. We've come up with several really good ideas for the Switch, ultimately, even though you fought tooth and nail for this one.
You know what I'm calling these pitches?
What's that?
I'm calling this whole package Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies. Oh. How about Lord of the Joy-Cons?
That's way worse. That's way worse.
That's the point. You want it to be horrible.
How about I have no mouth and I must Joy-Con?
Okay. Okay. Okay, we'll do that. I have no... Okay, so this is our pitch. It is a compilation game called I Have No Mouth and I Must Joy-Con. Look for it in retailers next... Never.
Never, because...
Because we're not going to make this.
Because, well... And because whoever does is clearly an evil, evil person.
Anyway, so that's it for the first half.
So, Phil Fish, that one's free for you. Everybody else, you'll have to pay us about $1,000.
Oh, God, it burns! So that's been another wonderful Spitball Sessions. Please hang on. We'll be back with the mouthwash.
Woo!
Nonsense, Nick Wayne. Nonsense.
It's time for the mouthwash.
And welcome back to the mouthwash, where we shoot fiery hot truths like airplanes out of a gun, along with just a hint of minty freshness.
Buh.
I'm assuming that the gun is being fired by Lady Justice Duck.
Lady Justice Duck.
Yes.
With a nice chiffon thingy.
Chiffon duck.
Chiffon duck. Chiffon duck!
I'm pretty sure that chiffon is what you put on a cake, not a nightgown.
No, actually, chiffon is a fabric.
Oh, okay.
But it's also something you put on a cake.
Okay.
Not both the same thing.
No.
Well, we're not going there.
No, we're not going there. No, so I'm a game designer now. I proposed.
Really?
I proposed the airplane gun.
You proposed or proposed to an airplane gun? Because one
I'll
of
tell
them...
you what, if I could find an airplane gun that would have me, I would totally propose to it.
So what game was this that you actually made some suggestions
so there was,
for?
There was somebody on Twitter who was developing a game called Blazing Beaks, which is all about ducks firing guns. It seems like it's going to be like the next nuclear throne. And so I said, well, hey, what about an airplane that shoots guns so that ducks can finally... Or...
a gun that shoots airplanes, you mean, right? You said an airplane that shoots guns.
Well, that would also be
and,
cool.
And I think there is a plane that does that. It's called a massive failure.
Well, if the plane shoots a gun, actually, that's kind of most airplanes.
Yes, well, airplanes with guns on them.
Yeah, well, yes, yes. You well scouted, Lou. Well scouted.
I mean, you won't find an AK-47 on, say, a Cessna.
Well.
Not your Cessna. Or not your Cessna.
Just don't lift up the tail flap on it next time. Okay. You never know when you might get into trouble. It's always good to be prepared. That's all I'm saying.
Talk about innuendo. Tail flap. Okay, moving on.
Okay. So we were talking about, in the first half of the podcast, we were talking about the Nintendo Switch. And I know that in the context of Nintendo Switch, people were talking about the latest game for the Nintendo Switch. By which I mean the first game, by which I mean the only game that I've actually heard people excitedly talking about, which is Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, and the fact that it's going to have DLC. And you had some thoughts about that, and I said, well...
You said you didn't care.
I said I didn't care, because I said I don't care that much about people who buy the Switch having to spend a little bit of extra money. Because, hey, guess what? If you already got $300 to drop on a console the day it comes out, you probably have that extra 20 as well.
Well, okay, yeah,
But... You know, so, but you were trying to make it sound like this was a first for Nintendo because this is the first time that they've ever had DLC in their games.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna say right now. I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking straight. They have done a lot more DSL recently, but it is
the
first. Yeah, DLC. This is the first time that a Zelda game has had DLC that I can think of.
Well, that.
Which I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's just, it's new, and so there's a lot of thought about it, and I thought it'd be something we could discuss.
Sure, and what my thought was, and the reason why I was saying, like, you know, I don't necessarily know that I care is, or rather, it wasn't so much that I don't care so much as it is that I feel like that argument has been had, and...
You've been had!
Like, I feel like this is a thing that people were talking about 2 or 3 years ago, and the ship has sailed. Like, DLC is the wave of the future, whether we want it to be or not. Like, no, all games have DLC.
I know, and it's not like we're reporting on anything new here.
Breaking news, some games have downloadable content.
And you can pay money for it.
Yes.
Who would have thought? And I think it's like part of the greatest concept of microtransactions. Essentially, the idea of spending money on games after you've paid them. Yes. And it's always been a controversial topic. And
yes.
And I fully agree. It is old hat. But because we're a new podcast, sure. I don't think it would hurt for us to just talk about
it
a little bit.
Have it on the record.
Yeah, have it on a record, our opinion. Yeah. I hate it all. No, I don't.
Well, so, I mean, my problem is that I feel like your first, or the reason that I sort of bristled the first time you brought it up is because you were said something along the lines of, like, it feels like an un-Nintendo-like thing to do. And I said, no, I don't think it does at all, because if there's, especially modern Nintendo, but, like, Nintendo has always been focused on trying to get as much money as possible out of as little thing, you know, out of as little change as possible. Like, if I, you know, if you want to talk about companies that have released more remakes of their games on every, like people give Xbox and PlayStation crap for re-releasing HD remakes of their games. Nintendo has been re-releasing literally the same game for multiple consoles for years. Like, I could go out and pay $7 buy a copy of the original Legend of Zelda for my Wii, which I don't have, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, if I had a Wii.
And then you can buy it for the Wii U.
I think now they've unified the eShop, but...
Actually, that is a thing. as from the Nintendo Switch on, purchases will definitely be account-driven. And it may actually be pulling from your Wii U library as well.
I thought it was Wii and Wii U are the same. Wii U and 3DS are the same, but it does not go to the Switch.
No, not. I don't think there's that link between Wii and Wii U. If you bought a Wii U and had a Wii, you can port.
Oh, right, no, it was like a channel thing to port certain
games.
Yeah,
but I don't think that anything that you owned on your Wii actually became part of your Nintendo.
Because, like, I know the DSi didn't, or most of it didn't.
No, well, okay, so not the DSi, but the 3DS.
Right.
They actually link your account to your Nintendo account.
Right, well, that's what I mean. And but the DSi doesn't come to the... like, the stuff that you bought for your 3DS or your DSi didn't come to the 3DS.
No, same thing. So
you have to rebuy it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, to some extent, like...
No, well, I mean, if you ported it over, just like the Wii U thing, so you could play the games, but they weren't linked to your account. So if you bought a 3DS down the road and didn't transfer, you would eventually...
I never managed to get my copy of Cave Story onto my 3DS, but that's okay.
It might have been a compatibility issue. Some games may not have...
But all I know is I had 2 or 3 games on my DSi that I was never able to get running on my 3DS. And it's not... like, I have 7 copies of Cave Story. It's not like that's a huge deal. Because, like, everybody should own a copy of Cave Story because it's one of the greatest games of all time.
Okay, so just to clarify what we're expecting, talking first of all of The Legend of Zelda, so people know what to expect from this DLC specifically.
Which will already be out by the time this podcast comes up.
It will not. The first content path, this is being read directly from Zelda.com, where they talk about what's being released. So the expansion pass is going to be $20. If you purchase it now, you get all three things. Mm-hmm. So immediately upon pre-purchase of the expansion pass, it unlocks 3 treasure chests which appear in the game's Great Plateau area. One of the treasure chests will contain a shirt with a Nintendo Switch logo that Link can wear during his adventure. Woo woo! Fantastic. I mean,
that's just bonus items for buying the season pass.
Yeah, and on top of that, I'll say that
that's just a goodwill gesture. That stuff's fine.
It's fancy pants.
Yeah.
Exclusive to the expansion pass. The other two will deliver useful items, expansions to the game. The first content pack is scheduled to launch this summer and will include the addition of a Cave of Trials challenge, a new hard mode, which I believe is in addition to the existing hard mode,
right.
Although don't quote me on that, I'm not 100% sure.
That would make sense if it's called a new hard mode.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because if I recall correctly, if you have any of the Wolf I think it's the Wolf Link amiibos, you get a hard mode built in. And a new feature for the in-game map, something that they add on but they don't specify. The second content pack, which you also get with the $20, will launch holiday 2017 and adds new challenges that will let players enjoy a new dungeon and a new original story.
So here's the thing. I think we need to talk about two different things here. Well, three different things, actually.
Okay. So lay them on me, man.
Well, so first going back, like, I was talking about how I don't feel like this is on Nintendo. And the one thing that I would like to go back to is Mario Run, which is which certain people that I may have written articles about have gotten kind of up in arms about, saying that they were upset that people were so offended that people didn't buy Mario Run, didn't want to pay the $7 to unlock Mario Run. Here's the thing. Mario Run is probably one of the worst tablet games I've ever played. And so the fact that they are then charging $1.50 per level, which is three levels, or you can buy all six worlds for $5, each world of which has three levels, like, I feel like that is kind of modern Nintendo. You know what I was saying? Like, they've done DLC now for Smash Brothers. They did it for Mario Kart. They did it for Fire Emblem, which is technically not, a Nintendo company in the same way that HAL was. Well, but I will tell you what: if you want to talk about gross and disgusting DLC and stuff that made me feel kind of exploited, Fire Emblem is a number one with a bullet in that category.
Yeah, but I'm okay. So, Fire Emblem, for those of you who know, is published under Nintendo,
right?
But it's developed by another team, and I don't think that the DLC decisions made there were specifically Nintendo's.
I'm not
decision.
Sure, but it is the same. But Intelligent Systems is the same as it is the same thing as HAL, where it is like a subsidiary, but a large portion of that game's leadership is directly Nintendo. Like, they are a third party, first party publisher.
Yeah, they create.
It's like BioWare and EA.
They create games under guidance of Nintendo. Right. Essentially,
it's like Activision and Blizzard or BioWare and EA, where they are technically not the same company, but the leadership is all the same, and they are under the auspices. And I mean, the most recent Fire Emblem Fates, or in Japan, Fire Emblem If, which is such a dumb name.
So why don't you go into detail? What specifically did they was disgusting?
I'm getting to that. So first of all, it was two games. What?
I'm picking on you.
Oh, okay. So first of all, it was two games.
Because it was
Conquest and Birthright. And those were two separate games, and they had different characters and different plot lines and different storylines and different challenge level. One of them played much more like old school Fire Emblem, one played much more like new school Fire Emblem. I think that I was okay with. Like, I bought both day one. It was like $65. You could buy one for 40 or you could buy both for 60. That's a pretty good deal. of course, then they did a great deal at GameStop where you had to buy both physical copies to get any of the little add-on tchotchkes or trinkets, which, despite the fact that you only needed one of the carts to play both because they were literally a DLC expansion. So if you bought both cartridges, you then still had to buy the DLCs to play the other game within that cartridge. So then that was fine. Then they released a third campaign that opened up 2 weeks after the game came out, called like Fire Emblem Fates Rebirth or something, or Resurrection, something along those lines. I don't actually remember it off the top of my head. I could look it up, but it's not that important, which was a third story about a third group of characters that your character also suddenly may or may not have been a sibling of, because he was, of course, brothers to both of the countries in his first campaign. You were a brother who was stolen at birth and taken to this other country, so both sides thought you were their brother and were mad that you joined the other team. And there was a third team that you could have joined, then got both sides mad at you, and then you solved everything. And it was sort of like, you know, the another side, another story from Kingdom Hearts. But then on top of that, every week for the next, like, 12 weeks, they released, for $2.99 a piece, they released a challenge map. Or it was like a mini. It was like, it might have been like a three pack of mini of challenge maps, and then after 3 weeks, so at the end of each month, they would release three packs as a fourth. They would release a fourth pack, which was like all three of the first packs from that month as a pack where you got all three of them for like $6. And they did that for like 6 or 8 months. So there is somewhere out there, there is something like I want to say it's $24 or $25 additional dollars on top of the $20 for that third side campaign and the $20 for the second campaign. There's like $24 of bonus material, plus two or three free maps, one of which was like Christmas themed and one of which was like New Year's themed.
Okay, so far so good.
So all told, $84 worth of DLC.
Okay.
Or
yeah, all right. So
for a $40 game.
So for a $40 game, you could buy $80 worth of DLC in pieces. Correct. And parts. So what's the problem with that?
The DLC is double the price of the game.
Okay. But they continue to produce content. So
Here's the thing. So what I'm saying is, I can see.
So what you're saying essentially is this is nowhere near as bad.
No. I'm saying that I definitely don't think this is as bad as that is. No, I think that's terrible. My thing is with Fire Emblem, like, you know, because here's the argument that everybody always comes back to, and there's two sides of this argument when it comes to DLC, and this is why I feel like to some extent I'm not sure how much meat there is on these bones, because there's always the two sides to this argument, which is either A, well, you don't have to buy it,
yep.
Sure, or, well, if you don't feel like you've got a full game, then you shouldn't buy the game in the first place. Well, what do you do when you've already got the game, and then they start putting out more stuff for it? And I think even beyond that, you have the other question with things like Zelda, which is clearly designed as a season pass to get people to not trade in their games to GameStop. Like, right. There is no other way of interpreting that than, hey, you know, guess what? In 9 months, we're going to be giving you something. If you pay us $20 now and can't pay us that $20 in the meantime, you have to buy it now because that season pass is going away.
Well, that is actually a really good point to put out there. And that is a good thing that I haven't heard many people mention about DLC, is the fact that by continuing to provide content, even at a fee, it encourages people to not trade in their game, not give their game to the monster that is GameStop.
Well, no. Well, what I'm saying is I'm coming at it from the other way, which is you're reducing consumer choice. Because here's the thing. If I am a teenager or if I am a young child who is, say, you know, let's say between the ages of 6 and 22, you know, somewhere between old enough to own a console and young enough that I probably don't have a steady full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably not getting a lot of games each year. But you know what a really good way to extend the life of my games is, or to get more games each year? Take them to GameStop, trade them in, and buy more games for cheaper, buy used games for cheaper. Now, I completely understand why game developers don't like that, and why game publishers don't like that, because every game that goes back to GameStop gets resold, they don't get a cut of that money.
It's pure profit for GameStop.
Well, it's pure profit for GameStop, yes, it's pure profit for GameStop, they don't get a cut of it. But here's the thing, if I sell a car, Hyundai doesn't get a cut of that either. And the reality is, I am free to do what I want with my car.
Yes, that is true. And that is a major argument for that factor. But I will posit this. I'm not much of a fan of GameStop and their behavior.
I have been boycotted them since Fire Emblem came out.
And one of the big issues there is not just that. And there is something to say about that. Because, well, I'm not ever going to have warm, fuzzy feelings when it comes to Hyundai, but the people who create games, they create experiences that so I share in something that they've created. And so there's a desire in me to support people that some kids go out there, they're not going to be into because they're probably getting the next Call of Duty and they don't care. But it actually hurts them in the long run because whenever I've done the trade in the game and I've played that game, being a person who does not make a lot of money.
Sure.
It really boils down to they're also kind of gouging you.
Well, here's the problem that this whole argument always runs into is that at some point you are left defending GameStop, which is basically like saying that at some point I have to defend the KGB. So I'm going to say right now, I don't like GameStop. I have boycotted them since I felt like they screwed me when I went to buy Fire Emblem and they told me and they lied to me about the fact that they didn't have a collector's edition because one of their salespeople decided that he wanted to save it for himself. I have not been back to GameStop in over 18 months. I've been clean, and I am a happier person than I've ever been, telling the best jokes of my life. Or writing the best reviews of my life. That said, GameStop would not be in business if there wasn't a market for them. So
that is true.
If we take just for a second, let's pretend we're not talking about GameStop. Let's pretend we're talking about, oh, I don't know, any of the other myriad pawn shops in the country, any of the other myriad mom and pop places that make money. Let's pretend we're talking about Craigslist if we have to. People bought these games. They paid money for these games.
So the developer's already gotten...
So the developer has gotten money out of these people already. Now, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be allowed to get some money on the back end, and EA has done that by adding season pass, or adding, passes to play online, and those kinds of things for people who buy used. You don't get that DLC. You don't get that stuff. You have to pay money to get that.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. And some of this falls on us, some of this falls on developers, and some of this falls on all sides. I'm not assigning blame to any specific person in this, in any specific set of people in this thing. Games are not being priced at a cost that is sustainable for development at this point, especially at the top tier. That is not my fault.
No.
It is not my fault that Nintendo is charging $50 for games. It is not my fault that EA is charging $60 for their games when it really is costing them $85 per person to make a game.
No.
That is on them. They can... The reason they aren't raising those prices is because most people wouldn't buy them.
That is true. Which means that...
Which means that they are literally making a game that is not sustainable and trying and supporting them through things like DLC. So far, I understand both sides of that equation. I am not saying that what they are doing is unreasonable. That said, I don't like the way that a lot of DLC is used. A lot of it feels cheap. And things like this, which feel like very, very obvious and transparent attempts to keep people from exercising their consumer choice, bother me. That feels un-Nintendo.
I can follow that.
Because Nintendo has, Nintendo has no problem with getting people to pay two or three times for the same thing. But I've never felt like Nintendo is anti-consumer. I mean, they'll release seven different copies of the DS, and if you're one of those people who wants to have the newest and coolest DS, they'll let you buy all seven of them for, they have no problem with taking your money. But I have never felt like they have done things that... I don't feel like Nintendo wants to hurt kids. I feel like Nintendo wants to make kids happy. I have always felt like Nintendo wants to make kids happy. You know, I've talked to you before, I feel like Nintendo has always suffered from a little bit of Peter Pan syndrome, where they sometimes make decisions that don't feel optimal because they have this childlike whimsy in them and they can't let go of it.
No, I wholeheartedly agree with that.
That company would not do something like this. And that is why I've said to you before, I feel like Nintendo has lost their way. And I don't know whether that is the passing of Satoru Iwata. I don't know whether that is the changing of the guard.
No, well, honestly, they've been doing DLC before Satoru Iwata died.
They haven't been doing DLC. They have not been doing DLC in this way. And I think the thing that a lot of people are bothered by is the fact that this is a season pass. If it was, I know that in 6 months I could buy this and still get the parts that I want, if I knew that I could pick and choose, if I knew that I could get this piecemeal or pay the $20 and get all of it, I think a lot fewer people would be upset. It's the fact that, A, you have to pay now for something that you might not even get for 9 months, assuming the game even does well enough that it's worth them actually making it, because at this point, that's basically Kickstarter.
Yeah, well, I mean, under that argument, though, they've probably already created all the assets for it, so it wouldn't be too hard.
Just not necessarily. The DLC they don't usually start working on until it's already partially through. But I feel like, but saying that you have to hold on to this for something that you don't know if you're going to like, maybe terrible, and you have to buy it now or you don't get it. I mean, they probably will release it, but at the moment, the way that the first couple of press releases I saw was written, it's you have to buy it during the month of March if you want this price.
No, I think it's you have to buy it in the month of March to get the three chests. That's the impression
that they were.
Remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, just in general, I don't like season passes. Way too many companies have abused it, including companies that I somewhat like Bethesda. I mean, Fallout 4, apparently, I thought all the DLCs kind of looked cool, but from what I gather, the six of the six pieces in the season pass, two of them were pretty good, two of them were okay, and two of them were garbage, which seems to be the way it is with most season passes. The Saints Row the Fourth season pass did something very, very similar, which, you know, one of the season pass items was really good, the other two were not particularly great. So if you're telling me you want me to pay $50 up front, sight unseen, heck no.
$20.
Well, no, this one's $20, but a lot of season, you know, the Bethesda Fallout, the Fallout 4 season pass was $50.
Season passes would undoubtedly never hold any sway with me.
But again, they want you to do that because they are pricing themselves at a price that is unsustainable.
Yeah, but I mean,
so at some point this has to shift.
Well, no, from your logic, yes, but I can appreciate the fact that from the sustainable perspective, if they were to say, well, people aren't going to buy the game at $80, so let's sell the game at $60 and add $40 worth of DLC because we know only half the people are going to spend the money on the DLC.
Sure.
That gives you the option to decide, do I want to buy more content and support them?
Sure.
And that way, that's not very questionable. That's kind of like saying you still get the game at less than we actually made it for, but we're kind of hoping that you'll spend a little extra money in so that we can keep making good games.
Sure, but the problem is, and again, like I said, I get the argument goes back to, well, it's extra stuff. It's not stuff they were gonna they would have made if they didn't get this money, or you don't have to buy it if you don't like it, or you're just being greedy because you want all this stuff without having to pay for it. Like, I totally understand where all of those sides come from, but there, you know, I have seen. For me, it's not the this doesn't feel like a complete game. It's this feels less complete than a game made by the same company prior to DLC. And I can give you a perfect example of this, which is the Tales games, which were made by Namco Bandai. You know, I am a huge, huge fan of those games. Yep. Love that series.
Yeah.
Big fan of Tales of the Abyss. Big fan of Tales of Symphonia. When those two games came out, they had special side quests in them. That Tales of Symphonia, especially, I think Tales of the Abyss had two of them, but like there was one where if you did this side quest, you could get three of your characters beachwear, you could get them like butler outfits, and then there was a third one where you could get them like party outfits, like ball gowns and suits.
Right.
And these were special quests that you had to go and you had to do, and you know it took several hours worth of work, and it paid off with a really cool scene. When Tales of Graces F came out, I think it was, which was the one for the Wii, and then the Tales of Vesperia or Exteria, whichever one it was.
Vesperia sounds correct.
Well, Vesperia, but there was the one before that, which starts with an X, and I don't remember what it's called. You could buy those outfits. You could just every single one of your characters could have their beach outfit for $1.99. The quest wasn't in the game. You could not do the quest to get the beach outfit. You could just pay $1.99 for each outfit.
Cosmetic.
Right. $12 to get all the beach outfits.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
For beach outfits.
Plus, you could also do that again if you wanted the butler outfits, and you could do it again if you wanted the ballroom outfits. So you could, I mean, sure, you could pay $36 for those cosmetics outfits. And, again, yes, doesn't take that much away from the game. It's some cosmetic items. Doesn't take that much, you know, I don't have to buy them. I didn't. It doesn't take that much away from my game. What was the third argument to that? Oh, it doesn't. Does it not feel like a complete game? No, absolutely not. Those were side content. That was cosmetic garbage. Do I feel that Tales of Symphonia was a better game for having that content? Absolutely. And at some point, because it had these cool quests that had this payoff, that had these cool scenes that then also happened to allow me to get these cosmetic things to remember them by. And gave me a reason to play through the game multiple times because you could only unlock a certain number of those outputs per game.
Which was getting people to play the game more, which was also ensuring that it stayed in their possession.
Which was ensuring that, but also just gave me a reason to play it again.
Yeah.
Beyond just, well, we want you to hold on to it, so we're going to price out all this DLC for the next 8 months. It was, hey, this game is cool, and you have this reason to play through this game an entire second time. Beyond just, hey, it's a really good game, and you're going to want to play through it a second time anyway. Yes, absolutely. Do I not have to buy that stuff? Sure. Does it feel like a complete game? Absolutely. Was it better when I didn't have to pay the $12 to get their beach outfits? Absolutely. And it's the same with, like, Project Cars. Project Cars is a game that we both like.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely a complete game. I'm not going to question that those DLC cars don't add that much. They're a little bit, they're a couple of tracks, there's some neat cars. But that game is so much better with those cars. And there's some really cool stuff in those cars. And games that came out before that, those would be challenge unlocks, those would be difficulty things, those would be, hey, if you can beat this lap time on this track, you can unlock it. Or if you can beat this racer at this speed, you can unlock it. You could do really cool things with things like that. And nowadays, that's all pay.
Let's compare that to another game. This one is a Nintendo title.
Okay.
That had DLC. And this is this will put through that same litmus test that you've just created. Mario Kart 8.
Okay.
How much was the DLC, dear? $15? I believe it was $15.
So I should point out that for games that are like the other one is being Super Smash Brothers, which also had some DLC. Uh-huh. I will point out that for games like fighting games and for things like that, I don't have an issue as much of an issue with charging for some money for add-on extra characters. That I actually am less upset with. But sorry, I don't know how Mario Kart works.
So with Mario Kart, $15, and it was actually two $7 expansions or $7.99 for the two expansions, I believe, and it was $15 for the set.
Okay.
What you got with each one was half of another full range. So it was like two more. For each one came with two more sets of four races.
Okay.
Four new tracks. Eight new tracks, I think, in each one.
So for $8 for eight tracks.
So it was actually a full 50% more racetracks to race in. And it unlocked another, I think it was eight characters to drive in. Four for each.
So, Luke, you remember how much I love SimCity 4, right?
Yep.
Did I like SimCity 4 Rush Hour?
Not so much.
No, I really liked SimCity 4 Rush Hour.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry.
Did I like Civ 5?
Yes.
Did I like Civ 5 Brave New World?
Yes.
You know where I'm going with this.
Anything that actually adds content to it is worth it?
No, but expansion... But I think that things that are more like... I think that expansion packs are somewhat different. For example, let's go back to Fallout 4 for a quick second. Fallout 4 had that season pass, but they also had a completely separate game, or a completely separate thing called the Far Harbor expansion.
Oh, I remember the Far Harbor expansion. Far Harbor,
which does not take place in Fallout. It does not feel like an additional... You know, like the other things were expansion... Like the things that came in the season pass were like a Pokemon... type
Why?
Game.
Why Pokemon? Why?
Because Pokemon's fun. It was a joke. I get it. there was you could build your own robots. There was
That'd be cool.
There was an expansion to the like base building, and there was a couple other things. Systems,
mm-hmm.
Additional ideas, additional concepts. Bar Harbor feels like a completely new game, a completely new quest, a completely new idea. I don't have an issue with that. In the same way that I didn't have an issue with things like Shivering Isles. In the same way that I didn't necessarily have an issue with, in the same way that I don't necessarily have an issue with the concept of expansion packs. But I think expansion packs is a very different thing from a DLC. Because an expansion pack feels like it is not the same. It feels it's an expansion pack. We are adding...
It's not just a few trinkets. It's an actual major enhancement.
And I think a really good litmus test for me is Crusader Kings, which you know I like Crusader Kings.
You like you some Crusader Kings.
I love me some Crusader Kings. I have at one point I think I had put in over 1,000 hours in Crusader Kings. Over 500, 1,000 maybe
over
pushing
5,000.
But and Paradox releases a new DLC slash expansion pack every 6 to 8 months. They've released, I think, 14 now, or 12 or 14. That game came out in 2009, and I think they released 14 packs. Plus, every time they released an expansion pack, they also released three cosmetic things, a music thing, and something else to go along with each of these. So, if you want your Mongol faces to go with the new Mongolian Empire, you can pay them an extra $2 for that. If you want the music of the Mongol Empire, you can pay them $2 more for that. And, if you want this thing, you can pay them, there are different sprites, different expansion, different art packs. And again, that's cosmetic stuff. Most of the time, I don't have an issue with people charging for some of the cosmetic stuff like that, where it is clearly a completely redrawn art thing. Now, with the Crusader Kings expansion packs, there were, of those, there were like five what I would call major expansion packs, and there were about nine which I would consider more minor expansion packs. Like, there was one that completely added the entire Indian Empire, including all of the things involved with the Indian Empire, re-added the Raja system, changed how holy wars worked, all this crazy stuff. And then they had the Way of Life, which added six new traits and allowed you to slightly focus more on seduction or things. But they charge you the same price for both of those. And I bought them both because I have bought every single Crusader King expansion pack that has come along the way because I like them and I want to support that game. And much of the time I buy them on sale anyway, so I'm not paying $15. But if I had paid $15 for Way of Life after having just bought Sons of Abraham, which added the entire Jewish Empire, I would have been livid because those two do not stack up the same. Those are not the same quality of product. And they are the same price. Or they are similar. It might be 10 and 15.
So I guess what we're coming to with this discussion is a really major part with any kind of DLC is making sure you are making the content you're supplying worth the money you're spending.
Right.
Especially going back to what we mentioned before, when you're paying twice as much as the original game.
I feel exploited at some point. Because at some point, I mean, there's the concept, there's the phrase throwing good money after bad. Which is, well, I'm already so deep into this that I either need to go all the way or I need to just walk away and admit that I've already lost the game.
Yeah, and there's also that the understanding of the attitude of the companies involved. With Mario Kart as a good example, there was a ton of content that came with $15, which wasn't even half of it's like probably a quarter of what you spend in the game, right? And you got a ton of really cool stuff.
Sure.
As opposed to some of these other microtransactions where you're talking about Fire Emblems where you end up spending twice as much of the game for little things that probably took them a few hours to put together.
Well, and $3 kind of reflects that. But, I mean, you know, so I guess what I'm saying is, like, I don't necessarily object to the Zelda DLC. Like, sure, $20 for a new story campaign, for a new campaign, a challenge mode, and a couple of other things, that seems fairly reasonably priced.
And I agree with that.
And there's that old saying that the justice defined pornography as he knows it when he sees it.
Yeah.
I feel like the problem is that with exploitative DLC, you know it when you see it. You can immediately smell it.
Right.
That, ooh, I'm being taken. Here's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
Dead or Alive, which I know, great. Really hard for a lot of people to go to bat for that game because, hey, most of the people who are playing it for the cheesy, you know, for the cheesy characters and the jiggle physics and all that garbage.
Jiggle physics. I was wondering when you were going to say jiggle physics.
I've been working my way up to it. That's a hard phrase to say. But look, I like DOA. As somebody who is not good at fighting games, it's got three things that I like, which is not particularly complicated, kind of easy, and all of the characters are kind of cool, and some of them happen to be attractive. So it's great all around.
I love how nonchalantly you say, happen to be attractive.
Hey, I'm just going to say it. The guy who looks like the construction worker, not super good looking.
No, so, not really.
Not at least not to me. I'm sure there are some people out there who really like
it. I got to say it one more time. Jiggle physics. Okay, now we can move on.
But I forget exactly what it was, but there was something... The Dead or Alive 5 last round is technically a free to play game.
Yeah,
they give you like two or three of the characters, and you can buy each character for like a dollar or two. If you bought them all, it would be about the same price as the game. No issue with that so far. You can just buy Dead or Alive 5 last round, and for like 20. And nowadays it's used, you can buy it for like $20. That's cool. No issues with that.
And you get the whole game with all the characters.
You can either buy the game with all the characters, or you buy the game, buy the characters piecemeal, and buy the campaign, the story mode if you want to. You know, otherwise you're just playing arcade against bots. That's fine. That's cool. That lets you pick what you want.
It's kind of like getting yourself a free demo with a few extra features.
It's a free demo, and then, hey, if all I want to play is the arcade mode, I can buy the character. Like, you can buy all of the characters as one pack, or you can buy them individually. So if I'm only ever going to play three characters, I can buy those three characters. I'm walking away a winner. I don't have to pay the full $60.
You're a winner.
I paid $20. I can even get the story mode for $30, and I'm still walking away better off than I started.
Right.
But if you wanted to go all the way with DOA DLC, I believe it is something like, on sale, on like 40% off sale, it was something like $375 for all of the outfits.
Oh, outfits.
$375.
Somebody here is poaching whales.
Yeah. Because I'll tell you what, I like DOA. Some of those costumes are even kind of cool. Not paying for that. Or you could buy each costume individually. Some of them are 99 cents. Some of them are $1.99. Some of them are $6 or $7. And again, obviously they're the suit.
The ones that take the most effective of the jiggle physics.
How did you guess? yes, no, obviously. The ones that are the most revealing tend to be the most money. And again, like, whatever. I don't want them enough to pay for it. So again, I don't have to buy it. I'm not necessarily... The game is obviously complete without them. But the older games had them, and they didn't charge you money for them. Not all of them. I'm sure that they didn't all have 50 outfits per character. But older games had them. You know, it very much feels at some point like a frog boiling in water. The temperature is getting hotter. Things are getting more exploitative. We are getting less bang for our buck than we used to. And then they're still trying to get us to pay for that. And then they're still trying to get us to pay for it, despite getting less bang for the buck. So I'm getting less stuff than I used to, and then they still want me to pay more for the stuff that they... Because I'll tell you what, Dead or Alive 3 was not $385. And it still came with... And even if we assume that Dead or Alive 5 has twice as many outfits, sure, $120, not $400.
No, yeah, and if you're thinking it's got about the same content, and well, in those older games...
Even if it had half the content.
And that's the whole intent thing, again, yes. Because there's a point where you're like, well, you're just being greedy.
Yes, exactly.
Because, I mean, it'd be one thing to piecemeal it up and be like, I don't know, twice the cost of the expectation right. That people would pay for about half the content.
Right.
But $300 much?
And that's sort of the thing. It's like, you know, going back to like Project Cars, like... Individually, I don't feel that any of those... I don't feel like any of those tracks is exploitative. Or even going back to Fire Emblem, like... I don't feel like charging $20 for those campaigns is exploitative. I don't feel that $5 for each of those... You know, for $5 for a map pack is... you know, for like a three-piece map pack is exploitative. It's the aggregate where it's $84 that feels exploitative. Because I'll tell you what... If I was to get that in an old Fire... You know, if I was to buy an old Fire Emblem game, I would probably get... It's usually worked out to be like one and a half of this game's campaigns for $45. And obviously prices have gone up, so you have to pay a little more. But I would not have paid $110 or $120 for a Fire Emblem game.
Yeah.
I would not have paid $120 for a game with this level of content, ever. If you want to pay me, you know, if you want to tell me that the game's cost is about $80, then that is where your DLC should wind up. If you want to tell me that game's cost is $100, then that is about where that DLC should wind up.
Well, I mean, there is some expectation for some flexibility there because they assume... Well, it's more for cosmetic things in certain situations. But for a game like that where they expect you to play and then move on and play the next set
right.
and not really want to leave any one of those unplayed,
right.
then you're right. It should tally up. But if it was a situation where it was like, oh... Well, you can unlock all these additional characters that you may or may not want to play with, but it doesn't actually add to the game, or it doesn't, like...
Right.
You don't need them. Then that becomes a bit more exploitative.
Yeah, I mean, that's... And that's where... Yeah, I mean, and that's, like Mass Effect, I think, was always... Like, everybody's like... BioWare fans have poisoned the well. Completely. Because of the just absolute awfulness with which they approach everything they didn't like about the Mass Effect series. Because they have poisoned the discussion for about all things DLC going forward because they raised such a hissy fit about things that actually were, in retrospect, pretty darn good. You know, their freakouts about DLC poisoned the well for all discussions going forward because they were like, oh, you can't charge us $10 for this. This isn't worth $10. In retrospect, most of the DLC that came out for BioWare stuff, pretty decent. Not all of it great. Not all of it was a banger, but it was all pretty good. Which makes it really hard to now come back and say... Well, this thing, that thing, or the other thing that you're doing, that's too far, that's too far, that's too far. The line's already gone. We've jumped the line. There's no slippery slope anymore. We're all the way at the bottom. The train has gone. We're riding onto it late. But this discussion's happened, and the world has moved on.
That is true.
And that is a really unfortunate place for me to leave that.
Well, I mean, it's also leaves us with the warning, because just because we're at the bottom doesn't mean we can't work our way back up to the top. And
again, I would like to call out, just, you know, because we've spent so much of this being negative, I do think there are some games out there that are doing it right. Like I said, I think some fighting games have done it really well.
Mario Kart does it right.
Mario Kart does it well. You know, the like Dive Kick did it really cool.
Actually, Rocket League is great, because they give you the opportunity to spend money on keys to unlock chests, which give you really
those
fancy stuff. Maybe, but
I think Valve killed that one. Like the Valve key, the way Valve handled their key stuff.
That's true. It can be, but I don't think Rocket League is a big deal.
I was more talking about the cars, like where you could buy the bonus cars, which it's about $3 for a car.
That's
which
true.
Feels, I mean, look, based on the amount of time I imagine it takes them to do that, that feels right. Because it's like, look, it's a cool cosmetic thing. If I play a lot of Rocket League, I'm going to have it. If I don't play a lot of Rocket League, it doesn't really get me much unless, hey, I really want to look cool.
Oh, well, ultimately, what I like about it is,
I don't like blind box DLC, period.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like gambling. But what I was going to say about the cars is one of the great things about that, and any of the cosmetic stuff that you get for Rocket League, they produced enough genuinely good content that you earn from playing the game, so that you don't feel like you need to spend money to get your car looking fancier the way you want it, because you don't.
That's sort of what I was saying when I was talking about the Tales games and all that stuff. Is it's like, if you put in enough that I don't feel like you've done this specifically to make me want to buy it. Like with Rocket League, it's like, no, we're doing this because we're cool. We've already given you all this awesome stuff, but hey, if you want to kick us a little extra money for some more cool stuff, we'd be happy to give it to you for money. You know, a lot of other games have done that, where Atelier Rorona did it pretty well, where it's like, hey, we've got all this cool stuff in here, but hey, if you want to get us like an extra $3 for this other character that normally isn't playable,
then you get some new cool stuff. Yeah,
are fine.
And that's the way it is, because like you mentioned the cars are cool, you can buy, but the ones you get for free are cool enough.
They are cool enough, and like you were saying, and you also get toppers, you get decals, you get flames, you get all this stuff.
So you're rewarded for playing the game, and then on top of that, you can be rewarded for spending money.
Right, and then if you want something even cooler, because you're playing it a lot, or because you really like Rocket League and you want to say, hey, thanks guys, you made us a really cool game. Also, the game's only 20-25 bucks.
Yeah.
So that's a lot easier ask for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then I paid $60 for this game, and now you want me to spend $50 more.
Right.
You know, that's I think is where the other half of that lies. And that I think for me is where it is at the end of the day, I think we know exploitative DLC when we see it. I think we know, you know, I feel like we know exploitative DLC when we see it. And the problem is maybe that too many people want to call everything exploitative, which I don't think it is. But I also think that the real ruler shouldn't be, does it feel like this game is not complete without this DLC? Which is what a lot of people who talk about games, that seems to be the yardstick they use, is does this game feel incomplete? I feel like it should be, does it feel less complete? Does it feel like if I had bought this game 10 years ago for this price, would I feel like I had been exploited? Especially in systems where it is like games in a series, where it's like, well, no, these five other games had all this stuff and now this one doesn't. I feel like for me, that's my big thing. It's stop thinking about everything in terms of absolutes.
And also something that you might want to, I would want to mention is, be careful who you listen to as to what is and is not like a good expense, because there are a lot of people out there who will complain for spending $1 on a game, because people like to complain. And if you fall into those things, and you're never going to be satisfied with anything you get, because that whole attitude of I should not be paying this much for this crap makes you think that it is crap, but it might actually be legitimately good.
Sure. But I will also say on the flip side that if you feel like you're being overcharged, you're right. You don't have to buy it. And you know, people should also be allowed to say that. Like, you don't have to buy it. It is okay. Not in the sense of you don't get to judge it because you don't have to buy it, but in the sense of it's okay. Walk away. It's fine. You'll live.
Vote with your wallet.
Yes, that is something that I would like the game community as a whole to do way more often, because it never does. All it does is complain on message boards about how it's going to vote with its wallet and then never actually votes with its wallet. Because I'll tell you what, if people kept doing the things that they claim they're going to do, we wouldn't have a lot of things that people claim they don't like.
Well, I think a lot of that comes from one of the biggest things that we have, and that's people who voice out things that they don't actually believe because they're looking for a reaction.
Yep. Why are we doing this podcast again? If you have any questions, thoughts, or pitch ideas, please send them to us at spitballsessions@gmail.com or at spitball.sessions@gmail.com or spitballsessions@neoncheetahs.com.
Yes.
Check out our writing and other articles at neoncheetahs.com. You can find me at twitch.tv/koholos or at KOHOLOS on YouTube. You can find Luke at twitch.tv/thedrell or at thedrell on YouTube. And nowadays we are also on Twitter. I'm KOHOLOS1 and Luke is THEDRE1E. Though he may have that fixed by the time this goes live.
Maybe.
I'd like to thank our editor-in-chief and sound engineer Trevor for editing the podcast. I'd like to thank Luke once again for joining me.
You're so very welcome.
And I'd like to thank all of you at home for listening to another exciting Spitball Sessions. See you next time. Till then, keep your pitch on. Keep your pitch in the batter's box and your feet on the ground, because one way or the other, you're winding up in space.
Nonsense segueing into nonsense. Nonsense segueing into nonsense.